You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Abortion is a complicated, divisive topic in this country, especially when abortion takes place later in a pregnancy. Rachel Redman aborted a wanted pregnancy at 21 weeks, which some states consider an illegal later-term abortion. Now, here in Michigan, the law doesn't use a strict cutoff time, so the definition of late-term is more complex and nuanced. But that has not stopped procedures like Rachel's from being controversial. Rachel Redman is taking the rare step of talking openly about her abortion with us, hoping to put a face on this challenging issue. She and I spoke about 6 months after she underwent the procedure. The conversation tends to focus on unwanted pregnancy, but that was not your story. Can you talk to us some about your decision to get pregnant?
So I had known I wanted to be pregnant for a long time, but I was in graduate school and my husband and I decided to wait until I was through with my program and through with my board exams. And so when the time came to get pregnant, I was very excited and I got pregnant very quickly. And we were just ecstatic. Everything was going according to plan. All of my ultrasounds, the early ultrasounds were perfect, and I was feeling really great, except for the the nausea, those things felt great because I was just so happy to be pregnant. And yeah, everything was going perfectly until we went to that anatomy scan, which most women do at 20 weeks. I had mine at 19 just because of scheduling purposes. And we found out in that early ultrasound, or in that 20-week ultrasound, that we were having a boy. We were so excited. And we had several hours of just being happy about our little baby boy until the doctor called and told us that she found the scan showed multiple fetal anomalies and that we would have to go in for genetic testing.
Now, what was that moment like to get that call from your doctor?
That moment was crushing, but it was also very surreal. It didn't seem real. It just seemed like this isn't happening, and I'm just going to think positively and not lose hope because it was out of the blue. It was out of nowhere. Everything was going smoothly, and I hadn't realized the importance of that 20-week scan, what the doctors were looking for in those scans.
So you had to go in for some more testing?
Yes. So several days later, I got an appointment with the genetic doctor, and in that appointment, they did another ultrasound, a more specialized ultrasound. It was a very long ultrasound, and they were able to measure a bunch of things, and they then gave us a diagnosis.
And what was that?
That our baby had a very rare thing called Dandy-Walker syndrome or Dandy-Walker malformation, which is when a part of the brain, specifically a part of the cerebellum, is missing. At first, they told us that the diagnosis is actually variable. Some babies are okay, and some babies, it's very, very severe for some people. With more information from the scan of the brain, they found a lot more evidence that in our child it would have been extremely severe.
That's an awful lot to wrap your heart around.
Yes.
And your mind.
It was really difficult to let it all sink in. And then after that, then they present an option.
So how was that presented? What options did you have?
So they said that based on the picture that they gave us, which was a child that would never be able to eat, to walk, to talk, to even raise his head up, to communicate even emotionally, that might need multiple brain surgeries as a baby because the head might have a lot of swelling. Seizures is a common thing. And so they presented this picture to us, which was extremely dire and which was no life for a child. It was a life of pain and suffering. And we didn't want that for our baby. We didn't want that for our child. And so they then presented different options of ending the pregnancy, which was also just, I didn't even have time to really let it all sink in. And the options were to have a procedure that's called a D&E or a dilation and evacuation, which is basically an abortion procedure. Mm-hmm. And the other option is to induce labor and then deliver the baby.
So what did you go with?
So it was a difficult choice in many ways. One way, the D&E is a shorter process. It's, aside from the initial prep work, they give you anesthesia so you don't remember. And the other process, the induction and delivery, is a longer process. They have to induce labor, which can take, they said, up to 3 days, and it would be a hospital stay. It's more expensive. And luckily, our insurance covered these things, but they can be up to $10,000 for some women. Just that process of having to deliver in a baby that was no longer living was just something I didn't want in my memory.
So you knew in your heart that final decision was the right one.
Yes, I knew in a strange way it was the easiest and the most difficult decision of my life, because I knew what we had to do. As much as we wanted this baby, we felt this baby was ours. You know, he's our son. It's strange because from the outside I don't look like a mother, but I know that I am. I have a son. And
you had named him.
Yes. We named our baby Emerson. And the beautiful part of that name is that my husband and I had not agreed upon a name. And in the few hours after our anatomy scan, when we found out it was a boy, the name just popped into my head out of nowhere, seemingly out of nowhere. And we were so excited because we both agreed on the name.
And then a few hours later, you got the call.
Yes.
After the procedure, so you had the D&E, mm-hmm. Can you talk about what you and your husband did to mourn this loss?
I did a lot internally in my own mind before the procedure. And my husband, we both said goodbye in our own ways to the baby before the procedure. After the procedure, there is an option to receive ashes from the hospital of the baby. I wasn't even aware. I didn't even think to ask that. But we met with the funeral director, and he said that they would be in charge of receiving the ashes, which took about 2 weeks. And at that point, we decided to go to Northern Michigan and release Emerson's ashes into the lake, because that was a place we went during my pregnancy that was full of happiness and joy. And swimming in the lake was just a really happy place for my husband and I. So we did a ceremony releasing his ashes.
And so now it's been almost 6 months.
Yeah.
How are you feeling now? Is there regret? Is there relief? What's inside?
There's no regret. I don't regret my choice. I believe that it was the only humane choice for my son and for our family. But I am filled with every emotion, and it varies day to day. And some days are okay, and some days are really, really difficult still. And I guess right now what I'm feeling is just this really intense need to share my story, to give a face to this story, because of the particular timeline of my own ending of the pregnancy happened just weeks before the election. And I was watching the debates, and the misleading and misunderstood things that our president said about abortion, that you could just rip the baby out of the mother's womb the day before the due date, is just completely untrue. And I really feel a need to tell the story of what it's really like for myself and for other women. There's thousands of us. There's probably more. I don't know the statistics of how many women are faced with this horrible diagnosis or any diagnosis and have to make this choice. And we need a voice, and we don't have one at this moment.
And you had commented that you'd seen a story in a leading New York Times, I believe, and the story was one way, but the comments struck you to that story, that there was a lack of compassion.
Yes, I think when the issue of abortion and specifically late-term abortion comes up, there is a huge lack of compassion, and I think that comes because people don't really understand what it is that we are all talking about. Because I remember years ago hearing the term late-term abortion, and though I've always been pro-choice, I thought, that's a weird term. That doesn't sound right. There's something wrong with that. It doesn't seem right. That, you know, people might ask, well, why would people wait so late? I've heard that. Why would you wait so late to have the procedure. But the truth is that it takes until 20 weeks for the doctors to do that anatomy scan to detect most of the problems that might be presented. And I had a genetic blood test at 15 weeks, which came back normal, and it can't detect everything. And so it's really important that people understand that women aren't just waiting till they're halfway through their pregnancy and deciding for some reason they just don't care, they don't want it. They are faced with a choice, and it is the most difficult choice.
Now, I'm interested in what you've heard from others in your circle or in your community or in your family who maybe have some strong religious or moral objection to abortion in any way, shape, or form.
So I feel lucky that the people in my family and in my community mm-hmm. are all really supportive of my choice. I am connected with other women in support groups who have not had the same luxury of the support of their families and how difficult that is. But I can say that I do see anti-abortion protesters on the street. And there was this one moment shortly after the ending of the pregnancy that I saw protesters on the street and I became so angry. I just wanted to yell. I wanted to honk my horn. I wanted to do something, and something inside me said, go and talk to those people. And so I don't know what it was, but it was just this need that I didn't want to hate the other, because to me they were the other, and that was what much of the election was based on, was casting people into otherness and then finding them different and not accepting them. And I thought, these people are good people. They have their own points of views. Nobody's wrong here, but let's just share stories.
Did you go talk to people?
So I did. I went and I talked to those four protesters, and I pulled my car over and I said, hi, my name is Rachel. I want to share my story, and I want to see where you have a place for me in your opinions and your mindset. I need to know how you can make space for me. And I told them the story, and I was really amazed. They stepped forward and offered me nothing but love and compassion, and even gave me a hug through the car window. And they asked me how I was coping with my loss. And they said, we're not here to judge you. We're here to love. And we talked about suffering. And one of the men said that, you know, sometimes life is about suffering. And I said, I know, but to me, I chose my own suffering over the suffering of my child. And I think that is what a mother does, is she makes choice on behalf of her children when they can't make it for themselves. They asked if I wanted to pray with them. And I said, well, I'm Jewish, but sure, a prayer is a prayer. And they said something, it was beautiful, it was about love and loss and healing. I don't remember exactly. And the one man said, all five of us will be forever changed from this interaction. And
that took some courage to roll that window down and say something.
It's strange because it did, but it also just, it wasn't a choice. It was just something that came over me to do, to say. And it healed something in me, because I learned that if we get to know the people we think are the other, we think are the enemy, we feel like we hate, we learn that we probably won't hate them so much.
And I know you said that you don't want to change people's lives, right, but you just want people to be more compassionate.
Yes. I just think that if people know the stories of what it's really like mm-hmm. to have to be faced with the choice to end a pregnancy, that maybe there will be more awareness around the issue and it won't be thrown around so insensitively and so with so many assumptions and misunderstandings. And I understand why women don't talk about this. It's not a safe place to talk about ending a pregnancy, and I'd like to hopefully make space for more women to come forward. And I'm part of a community now where more women are stepping up and sharing their stories in amazing ways, and they inspired me to share my own.
What would the overturning of Roe v. Wade mean for us from your perspective?
It would be devastating. You really can't know what it's like until you are in that, in those shoes, in that person's shoes. And even myself at 15 weeks, when they asked if I wanted to do a genetic screening, at first I thought, I don't know, because there could be nothing that could be presented to me that could make me want to end this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so even my 15-week self could not understand my 21-week self that chose to end the pregnancy.
And there will be people, and you may have encountered them already, that will say, no matter what, that baby needed to be born and let life play out as it will. Mm-hmm. How do you answer that? Because you had to wrestle. That's the question you had to wrestle with, wasn't it?
Yes. So I don't know if this is a little too woo-woo or out there, okay. But so I feel very connected to what some people call God, what I might call the universe, what many different definitions for that. And I was lucky enough to have a dream the day after the anatomy scan, where I got to talk with my son, with my baby, and he asked me why he couldn't stay with me. And I told him, we love you so much. Your father and I love you so much, but we can't bring you into this world in a broken body. We have to let you go so that you could come back in a healthy body. I think people say that, you know, we just have to let life unfold as it does, but I think that I did in my own way. And to me, this is how it was meant to be.
Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me.